Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, February the 1st. Cannot believe it, but we're already in the month of February. Tonight, we're going to catch up with our good friend, Fausta Rodriguez-Wirtz. She's the editor of Fausta's blog. We're going to be talking about the cancellation of the visit between the president of Mexico and the president of the United States. Obviously, everybody in Mexico is talking about it, and there's an interesting movement in Mexico. It's almost as if a lot of Mexicans are saying, you know what, we can make it on our own. We don't need the United States. And it's interesting. I've never seen anything like that before, but even Carlos Slim is now getting involved in this whole thing. Maybe he wants to be the next Trump of Mexico. I don't know. But it's really fascinating what is happening between the United States and in Mexico. In the meantime, of course, nothing has changed. We're still doing a lot of business and everything else like before. We'll talk about this travel ban, which I think was poorly implemented, even though it was the right idea. We'll talk about some of the marches and what I think are some misunderstandings of what immigration is. I never felt that immigration means that you have a right to come to the United States. And I even wrote a post about this over at Babalu, as well as the American Thinker. It doesn't mean that you can freely come to the United States. It means that you have to play by the rules of the United States. And so many of these marches, I'm confused, you know, listening to them and reading some of these placards. You almost get the feeling that, hey, you know, it's anybody can come to the United States. Well, that's not really true. That's not the way it's ever been. The United States, like any other country, has the right to limit who comes to the country. And then we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in Brazil. There's another story of corruption in Brazil that Fausta is going to update us about. Just very quickly, the show will be available at Babalu. Our friends over at Babalu, Valentin, Prieto, Ziva, everybody over there, the show will be available at Babalu tonight. So if you're listening over there, thank you, as always, for listening over at Babalu. Let me say hello to our good friend, Fausta Rodriguez-Wirtz. How are you, Fausta?
Very well, Silvio. We are having a beautiful day here in Miami.
Same here. Absolutely lovely, lovely day. I would say even on the warm side, not hot or anything like that, but just absolutely beautiful day. And it's supposed to get cold again. Now it's going to get cold, I guess they're saying, tomorrow, and then it's going to be hot again. So you know what they say in Texas, if you don't like the weather, wait 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it changes a great deal. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about these marches and all of that stuff, but I was talking to a friend of mine today. Well, you know, why don't we start with what's going on in Congress, because our Congress is looking rather silly. At least a lot of members of our Congress are looking rather silly. But I was talking to a friend of mine today, and he asked me, what do you think is going on? And I said, man, these people in Congress are reminding me of a banana republic. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you see on comedy shows, Benny Hill, something like that. This is not very professional behavior, and not the kind of thing you would expect from the U.S. Senate to have a vote and they don't show up. I mean, it's totally ridiculous, Fausta, and I'm disgusted by it. What about you?
Well, yes, but it's not unexpected. The Democrats, as far as I can see, are intent on throwing a snit at everything, every day, for as long as they can, and as long as the media will cover it. And I don't know if this is going to amount to an actual movement that will make a difference, but it certainly is. From the point of view of people that were sort of on the fence, well, you know, they weren't too crazy about Trump, but they're voting for him because they didn't want Hillary. I have seen several, and I mean more than a dozen people posting in social media consistently saying, look, I wasn't sure before, but now this is talking me into supporting Trump more than I ever thought I would. But, you know, I think there's a certain lack of perspective. I mean, the kind of, I was writing about this today, and I did a post at the Tech Guy blog I said that the constituency most likely to include are the people who think that Meryl Streep was brave because she wasted her Lifetime Achievement Award speech by ranting about Trump. They're the same people who approve of women who reduce themselves to their private parts and they wear ridiculous hats and costumes while littering and vandalizing the mall and the largest building complex that was privately built, owned, operated, and maintained entirely by women in the whole world. The same people who think that obstructing airports over an executive order that at that point they hadn't even been able to read is a good idea and who see nothing wrong by an entertainer vowing to punch people he doesn't agree with in the face with soul, heart, and joy, and the same people who don't realize that parroting talking points on TV talk show programs convinces no one. It's
right. No, I think you're exactly right, Fausta. And in fact, you know, because we've been doing the show for a while, that I was not crazy about Donald Trump during the campaign. I mean, I voted for him because I felt the choice between Trump and Hillary Clinton was clear. And I thought Trump would have a better – I thought his package would be better than Hillary Clinton. And we're already seeing it with the cabinet and the Supreme Court appointment. I mean, I would hate to think of what Hillary Clinton's Supreme Court appointment would look like. But I'm beginning to feel right now that I really want Trump to succeed because I really want these idiots to fail. I mean, when you see, the stuff that is being done in the Congress, they don't show up to vote. The things that are being said about this Supreme Court nominee, he's anti-woman. He's anti-this, he's anti-that. You're right about the airports, people protesting about something they didn't know anything about. I mean, it really makes you wonder how they think that this is going to get them to win the huge segments of the country that they lost. They may win San Francisco. They may win New York City. They may win Chicago. But they need to win a heck of a lot more than that if they want to get back in the game. And the real problem with the Democrat Party is not that they lost the presidency. I mean, that obviously gets all the coverage. The real problem is that they have been completely wiped out in the state legislatures. I mean, they don't have the governors that could someday run for president. They don't have the state legislatures to draw up the congressional seats other than in California, where they have obviously almost absolute control. So I don't think they're helping themselves by doing this. And that's why I kept hoping for a Democrat to stand up and say, hey, folks, let's cut this out. Okay, let's give the guy the cabinet. He won the election. Let's give him the cabinet. After that, we'll have policy discussions. I mean, that's what I was kind of hoping for, somebody to stand up and do that. But maybe I'm too optimistic, Fausta.
I think part of the problem is that the Democrats simply cannot believe that identity politics is just not the key to a successful political plan. I mean, there was even a gentleman on TV this afternoon talking, who is a Muslim, who was absolutely offended that Nancy Pelosi in her rally told this other African-American gentleman to tell people, remind them that you're a Muslim, as if the guy didn't know. I mean, come on. How insulting can you get that she thinks that she's the one that has to tell him how to address the public and that it would be a consequential matter? I mean, please.
Exactly. And why don't we go ahead and let's go to the travel order ban, whatever they call it. First of all, let me say that I don't think it was well implemented. The implementation that one Saturday was not good. By that, but what I mean by that is that I think there was confusion, and some good people were not hurt in the sense that they were damaged forever. But I mean, look, you know, if you have a green card and all of a sudden you're being stuck in the airport, you know, that's not a nice thing. But at the end of the day, only 100 people out of 300,000 were impacted. But it could have been done better. But all that they're trying to do is they want to make sure that we have the right vetting procedures, because these nine countries or seven countries that we're talking about are indeed sources of terrorism. The President Obama's administration has labeled these countries that. And yet all you hear is that this is a Muslim ban, that this is against immigrants, that, you know, it's about religion. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, when people, I know they're not that stupid. I mean, I know they're not that stupid. So it has to be bad faith, Fausta, because they're not that stupid. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has to know that this is not about religion or about immigration. She's not dumb. So it's really bad faith. That's what it is. They're bad faith. They're out there misleading people on purpose. They're turning this into a political game that is very ugly, that does not help the country. And I think they're going to lose eventually, but still, it's not helpful, Fausta.
Well, I'm sure Nancy Pelosi is smart enough to know that she's trying to manipulate her constituency, the people who will believe whatever Nancy Pelosi says. And it is kind of hard to look for actual information. There is even an article on Al Jazeera, of all things, that says that the United Arab Emirates foreign minister has said that the supposed travel ban on citizens of these seven mainly Muslim countries is not Islamophobic and does not target any religion. Never mind also the fact that the countries with the largest Muslim populations, such as Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and India, are not included in this so-called travel ban, which, by the way, is shorter than a travel ban that Obama himself, half as long as Obama's own travel ban in 2011. So that's one thing. Another thing, there is also a lot of misinformation being spread around. I don't know if you had a chance to see it because I had just posted it on Facebook right before the show started that shows a photograph of
Alien? The photograph
Elian
of Alien Gonzalez?
Being taken
right.
From his uncle's arms. And the text
right.
Reads, this picture above, the picture shows Alian Gazwan, a Syrian child brought to the U.S. by relatives living in Paterson, New Jersey. Acting under the orders from President Trump's executive order, the young Alian was seized from the home of his aunt and uncle. Now, I mean, people
wow.
who get this, are not going to go back and, I mean, because most of them are not going to even know, first of all, who Elian Gonzalez is. They're not going to know that it was President Clinton with orders from Janet Reno who actually enforced the removal of this innocent child from his relative's house after his mother had died, who actually carried out this injustice. And it's going to get spread around like fire. I mean, so we're talking about misinformation and just nonsense, if you ask me,
right.
Unequaled
well,
in American history.
No, I agree, but it's bad faith. I mean, they're acting in bad faith because, you know, the truth is that we, you know, President Trump, now, again, just to be consistent, I think that President Trump would have been a lot better off had he spoken to the nation the night before and said, tomorrow we're going to implement this, and it does not apply to people with green cards and so on and so on. I think he would have been, this whole thing would have gone through a lot easier than it did. So in that respect, I am critical of the tactics, not the objective, but some of the tactics. I think they ended up confusing or muddling things a little bit, as they say. But at the end of the day, for all the outcry, for all the demonstrations, for all the outcry, 100 people out of 300,000 or so were impacted by this. And most of them were sent home fairly quickly. But I go to a larger point, and this is that really it's really beginning to bother me. And that's what my post at Babalu and American Thinker was about, that the idea that people think they have a right to come to the United States, that somehow the United States is racist or unreasonable because it says, well, we want certain conditions, you know, we have some vetting requirements. Every country in the world does that, or at least it should. I mean, unless you want to look like Europe, And every country in the world does that. You just posted something about Argentina, didn't you? About Argentina and immigrants, where they're actually not going to allow people. They're going to kick out people with criminal records. I believe I saw that on your blog today, Fausta.
Well, yes. Argentina is going to stop admitting foreigners who have criminal records from entering the country. And the article that I read it from was in El País, and the guy was saying, well, you know, Argentina has always been an open country, which is factually not true entirely, but the gentleman does not mention that the drug cartels have noticed that Argentina had a relatively open border, and the problem is that the international cartels are noticing that you can enter Argentina relatively easily from other countries, and it has become a narcotics hub because the traffickers are using Argentina as an entry point for ephedrine and pseudoephedrine and for an exit point for drugs. So the country becomes a hub for methamphetamine in the United States and for Europe for cocaine. And as a matter of fact, the I think it was the partners that they're having in Europe are part of the Italian mafia. So at this point, Argentina, by 2013, Argentina was believed to supply 70 tons of cocaine a year to Europe, which is a third of Europe's annual consumption of cocaine. So you have a
wow.
problem of, as you do here, of human trafficking and drug trafficking in a country that was letting people in and has become a transit hub. Then there is a problem of the prison population. So 33% of the custody of the people in custody of the federal penitentiary services are foreigners. So,
right.
Yeah, I may have been an open country, relatively speaking, but it's not like that's a good thing necessarily.
Right. Well, and I think openness, to me, it all comes down to having order. That's number one for me when it comes to immigration or anything. You have to have order. You have to have a system whereby people, and I'll use the example of the Cubans. You know, Cubans came here in, like our family, we came here, and lots of Cubans came here in the Freedom Flights. But every single day, two flights came in, and the people in those flights had been vetted to some degree. When they got to Miami, they generally were accepted by families who basically took responsibility for them, and they got to work and all of that. But there was a certain plan, there was an order, and, you know, if someone didn't behave, well, that person was not going to have a successful time in the United States. But for the most part, most of the people who came, of course, behaved and have done rather well in the United States. By now, their children have, a lot of them have graduated from school and so on. But there was a plan, there was a system for people to come to the United States. The problem with illegal immigration, wherever it may be, is that it's chaotic, it's disorderly, and then people, criminal elements, will use these opportunities to promote their interests, as happens in the U.S.-Mexico border. We're going to talk about Mexico right after the break. And what apparently is happening in Argentina, where all of a sudden the cartels see an opportunity to use these openings, Fausta, to promote their interest. And that's why I think illegal immigration is chaotic and bad for any country, Fausta.
And this is not limited to Argentina or the transit through Mexico. The problems we're talking about are encompassing the whole hemisphere. And I also blogged this week about El Salvador and the turf wars between the gangs. And then there's a much, much bigger problem. This is going to be seriously bad news if it's not already. that the largest criminal organization in Brazil, the PCC, that's Primeiro Comando de Capital, which means First Capital Command, is recruiting Colombian FARC members because they have, the FARC members have experience in heavy weaponry that can bring down, for instance, helicopters, and they have experience with 50 caliber machine guns, and these guns can perforate bulletproof cars, and they also want fighters who have experience, and they want people who have experience in making bombs and planting landmines. So this is a tremendously bad news. I saw this in the Wall Street Journal. Inside Crime has been reporting about it. And also, there again, you have another problem where the PCC is using Uruguay as a transit point for international drug gangs in Africa and Europe. They're
right.
Also operating in Paraguay and Bolivia.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is you have a breakdown in the rule of law. You have a breakdown in order and these things begin to happen. Fausto, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about Mexico and the United States, and we'll also do a little talk about Brazil. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. You know, we play the music of Carlos Guedes, and I just wanted to let everybody know, if you live in the Dallas area, you probably know this already, our friend Carlos is playing every Saturday night, or will be playing on Saturday night indefinitely, at a place called NOLA, N-O-L-A, in downtown Dallas. We went there last Saturday night and spent the night with him, and the band had a wonderful time. The food is fabulous. Anyway, he's playing. And he's going to be joining us, I think, on the next Latin America program. He's going to be joining us to talk a little bit about what he's doing and tell us about some of the music he's been playing. But if you're in the Dallas area and you have a chance to, if you want to go downtown Saturday night and really have a great time, Carlos Guedes and his band over at NOLA, N-O-L-A, it's right downtown. It's really easy to get to. Lots of parking, so not a problem. At all. It was just absolutely, absolutely fantastic. Let's get back to Fausta. Fausta, obviously, President Trump and President Peña Nieto, the last time we spoke, we thought we'd be talking about their visit. Well, we're not talking about their visit. They had a little bit of a, they canceled. I mean, both sides are claiming that they canceled. I guess it doesn't really matter. It got canceled. But I'm beginning to wonder if it really, and again, not to be critical of Trump, but if it really makes any sense to keep talking about who's going to pay for the wall. Why not just build a wall and put that on the side and talk about whatever else has to be talked about so that we can get this thing off the ground, Fausto?
Well, of course, you're right. The only thing that I'm wondering about in the middle of this story is how much of each of their posturing, for lack of a better word, is because of talking to the choir, talking to the constituencies, or just, how can I put it, grandstanding before doing any actual bargaining. There's a lot. I mean, I don't know if you have studied much about labor unions. There is a lot of big talking before a labor union actually sits down with a business, especially
right.
The heavy industries. You know, historically they have done that. I don't think it's going to become the way of the labor unions, you know, where there is violence and the Teamsters and Jimmy Hoffa, you know, fought it out and Jimmy ended up on the 50-yard line of, you know, the Giant Stadium,
right,
or anything
right.
like that. At this stage of the game, however, there's a lot of grandstanding because Peña Nieto is immeasurably disliked. I mean, Peña Nieto is happy when he gets a 12% approval rating. That's how bad his approval ratings are. And Trump is starting, and he's getting a lot of things done. And he's not going to – he most likely doesn't want to get mired in the middle of a negotiation with Mexico. So there's
right.
a lot of grandstanding for different reasons on each side, while at the same time, you know, their constituents and their base, for so to speak, want to hear something about it. So I think that that's what it's coming down to at this time. We will see
yeah.
how this develops in the next few months.
I agree with you. I think there's a lot of posturing, and perhaps Peña Nieto was looking for a reason to cancel, or even perhaps Donald Trump wanted to cancel it because of posturing. Whatever the case may be, I've noticed a couple of things. You know, maybe you saw the story about Carlos Slim in Mexico sort of becoming like saying, hey, you know, Mexico, we can do this together, you know, almost you know, making Mexico great again kind of a movement. I've seen several posts in Facebook from Mexican friends from Mexico saying things like, you know, if he wants to renegotiate, well, let's renegotiate. You know, we can sell to somebody else. And, you know, this kind of nationalism that I'm seeing, which is maybe to be expected. But here's what I told a friend from Mexico the other day who was asking me about this. He was saying, well, you know, why don't we just – he said, why doesn't Mexico just do business with somebody else? And I said, well, here's the problem. The Chinese are not going to buy as many avocados as the United States does. And so the United States market is so big that Mexico needs that market besides the fact that it's right next door. And I have a feeling, and this is just my feeling – that Trump thinks that he will win in the long run, meaning that he thinks that Peña Nieto will crack first. And maybe he's playing that game as well. My own personal feeling has always been build a wall. The Mexicans don't realize it, but this wall is actually good for them, Fausta, because it's going to stop two of the biggest problems they have, which is money going south and weapons going south. And they cannot stop it. I mean, it's obvious that Mexico cannot stop this on their own. So the wall would contribute to stopping this. Build a wall, stop talking about paying for it, and move on. That's my feeling, Fausta.
Well, there is the question of, do the Mexicans really want to stop the drug trade? And I have very serious doubts on that. I mean, Peña Nieto's own campaign apparently was partially funded by the Jalisco cartel. I mean, by the Juarez cartel, I'm sorry. And there's a lot of corruption in Mexico where the powers that be don't really, historically, really don't care about, you know, the what's good for the average Mexican, never mind the whole country. So I'm very skeptical on Mexico. I do agree that a serious approach would just get the kind of effective border controls that would hinder the cross-border traffic of humans and drugs and weapons. The Mexicans can be made to pay for them in some ways, not, you know, it's not going to be like sending them a bill like you would get if you went to a tailor and you had your suit made, but there can be made to pay without extracting heavy tariffs or anything like that. At the same time, it's a good idea for Mexico to start looking at ways where they can clean up their act, help their people, and improve their economy. So Carlos Slim has huge amounts of money invested in both sides of the border. Plus, he's part owner of the New York Times. He's being involved in media. He has a new media venture with Univision, on. So it's a good thing that he's encouraging people to do the right thing, in a sense, of improving the Mexican economy.
Right.
We'll see
well,
how
one thing,
out.
Faust. Yeah, we'll see how it works out. We'll see how it works out because, as you know, Mexico's problems are structural, whether it's Pemex, whether it's the countryside, and those problems really have nothing to do with the United States. They wouldn't have been any different if Hillary Clinton had won the election. But one thing I do hear from people is that President Trump may be giving Andrés López Obrador, who, as you know, was a leftist candidate who in 2006 came within a few thousand votes of winning, and then in 2012 did fairly well in that election as well, and is planning to run again in 2018. This is like the guy who just keeps running for president. It's remarkable. But many things I've read and seen, and I kind of fear this myself, that you could have López Obrador basically ride on the back of a certain Mexican nationalism and anti-NAFTA attitudes. And we could end up with President López Obrador on that side and President Trump on this side. And that would make the television show The Odd Couple look rather meek, Fausta, because that would be The Odd Couple, you know, López Obrador and Trump. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll get a lot of things done, but I wouldn't bet on it, Fausta.
Well, in my mind, the closest thing to López Obrador in the United States would be Bernie Sanders. Imagine that team together all night.
That's right. Maybe they'll both. Maybe they'll put a team together against Trump in 2020. But I just, you know, again, I'm basically rooting for Trump. I think for the reasons we stated before, because frankly, I think the Democrats are getting more and more obnoxious every day. But I am critical to some degree of how he's handled Mexico. I think maybe there's a little bit too much posturing, and we got bigger problems in the world in Mexico, Fausta.
And part of the problem is that Mexico doesn't seem to understand that.
Well, of course, they think that, you know, that they are the number one problem. Not necessarily the number one problem, but should be the number one issue. And as I've told many of my Mexican friends, I've said to them, let me tell you something that you're not going to like, but Mexico is like problem number 30 in our top 20. I mean, it's really not it's not the problem that, you know, it's not Iran, it's not Israel, it's not Russia. I would even argue
certainly
that Brazil
China.
Is a big, no, not China, exactly. And I would even argue that Brazil, which is going to be our next topic, could very well become the biggest problem if you continue to have these corruption and this almost implosion of the political class in Brazil. But Fausta, you wrote something about another case of political corruption in Brazil. I thought it was very interesting. Tell us about it.
Well, the guy who used to be the richest man in Brazil, Eike Batista, was indicted on charges of corruption. So he disappeared for a few days, and it turned out he had left for New York City, and he is accused of paying $16.5 million in bribes just to the governor of Rio de Janeiro state alone, and over a 7-year period. So his lawyer said that Eike Batista had left Brazil for business reasons. He left Tuesday night last week, and the police were about to arrest him. But he said that his lawyer said that Batista didn't know that an arrest warrant was about to be issued. So in addition to the bribery charges, he also is charged with having paid $2.35 million to Dilma Rousseff's campaign in 2010. He's also investigated in the Lava Jato, the Operation Car Wash, involving Petrobras. He, and on and on. I mean, financial crimes related to the failure of OGX, an oil company he created, which went bankrupt in 2013. So Batista disappears on Tuesday night. Apparently, he had been to New York City, and while he was there, he shaved his head, which all the newspapers were talking about, too. Because he used to have kind of salt and pepper hair and rather flamboyant kind of hairdo. So the guy comes back, shaved his head, and now he's in the clink. And apparently, O Globo, which one of the local newspapers in Brazil, actually one of the largest newspapers in Brazil that actually has news bureaus here in the United States, reported that Batista had been negotiating with the Brazilian federal authorities the terms for his return, because from the moment he left, he was regarded as a fugitive. However, the Brazilian authorities, knowing that he was in the United States, did not file a formal request for his arrest. So this story of a negotiation for his return, it seems actually pretty likely. My opinion is, I mean, I am amazed that the prosecution on Batista got as far as it did. The richest man in Brazil to be arrested after leaving the country is absolutely mind-boggling, considering the amount of corruption in Brazil and for how long it had gone on. This guy had been paying, I mean, as we said, tens of millions of dollars to local politicians, and I'm sure he never expected that he was going to get nabbed.
No, I don't think so, and I don't think he expected the whole world to see him without his hair either. I think that that might be my. I mean, it probably looked like a Buddhist monk or something with you know, when I saw his picture. But yeah,
he looks,
I mean,
kind
so
of very zen, actually. He looks better than, I mean, I think he looks better than before. He has this kind of lean zen look. But,
well, he may,
yeah.
All I know is, I'm sure that was the last thing in the world he thought about when he shaved his hair, that or he shaved his head, that he would be on the front pages looking like that. But there is an issue that I'm just going to touch on, and maybe we can get into it more on the next program and devote a good bit of time to it. And that is, I saw an International Monetary Fund report. I'll find it and I'll send it to you, in which the IMF is projecting not really very good economic growth. And maybe I saw it on your blog, come to think of it. The IMF is not projecting a lot of good growth for Latin America, for Latin American countries. Now, some of it is because of commodities, and there are always obviously reasons for it. But the point in bringing this up is that this is a region where I think a lot of the politicians, even some of the good guys like Macri and some of the others, may be under pressure because the economies are not performing. And you could have, you know, the left could start blaming all these, you know, free market policies or whatever for that. So I think Latin America, the fact that it's not growing, Fausta, scares the heck out of me, because that, as you know, brings about a lot of problems, Fausta.
It certainly brings a lot of transients coming to the United States, whether you want to call them immigrants or migrant workers or undocumented people, that it does. And also, there's a mirror problem in that there is eventually a brain drain when a country is stuck. A lot of the professionals and the people who have human capital leaves the country for greener pastures.
Right. That's right, and the growth projections for Latin America were less than 2% in 2017.
Yes.
Now,
I think that was one of my tweets where you saw it.
Okay, that's right. And here's and I'll just leave you with this last thought. here is one of the here's one of the things that I was telling some of my Mexican friends the other day. A friend of mine who used to work with Univision and has moved to Mexico. He's working with another network right now, a local network. And we were talking about this, and I said to him, you know, if Trump can get the American economy to grow at 4, 5, 6%, that would be the best news for Latin America, because that would translate into some growth in Latin America. Part of the reason they're not growing is because we're not growing. We had a 1.9 GDP in the last quarter of President Obama, Fausta. So this is where I think Trump could actually win over support from Latin America by making the American economy grow. And that, of course, as you know, would flow south, Fausta. Maybe not right away, but eventually, and make some of those economies grow a little bit better, Fausta.
Oh, without a doubt. Trump's success depends almost entirely on how the economy performs in the next 2 years.
Right. And at least to his credit, he's doing the things that I believe will make that happen, you know, such as going after regulations. And I was listening to the radio this afternoon. I went to a family friend's funeral, and on the way back, I was listening to Hannity, I think Hannity in the afternoon, and Hannity was saying that he has had talks with members of Congress in private, and they are really putting together a pretty good tax reform and so on. So he's optimistic that we're going to see some good things here in the first half of 2017. And if you could get the American economy moving, I don't want to sound like a commercial, but if you want to get the American economy moving and really start consuming and growing again, that is a tremendous boost for Latin America, Fausta.
And that's something that almost nobody mentions when they're talking about Latin America, if they ever talk about it. I mean, you and I know it's not the hottest topic at the moment, but it's true. A growing American economy translates into a lot of benefits for the hemisphere, not just business-wise, but also, you know, as far as help to other countries, tourism, net employment, and so on.
Oh, everything.
So,
no,
yeah.
It's everything. It translates into, I mean, let's face it, to use the old example of the locomotive, you know, we're the big train. We're pulling a lot of these economies. And right now, they could use, believe, you know, they could certainly use a little faster speed than the one we've been on for the last few years of President Obama. Well, Fausta, as always, it's great to have you on the show. Great to talk to you. Keep up the great work at Fausta's blog. And I'm sure we'll have something to talk about next week. What do you think?
Oh, we always do, Silvio.
That's right. Well, would you have to keep an eye on these? Yes, I'm predicting New England, but I understand everybody wants Atlanta to win. So I just want a good game. I don't want a blowout. When my team is not in, I just don't want a blowout. And there's always a blowout in the Super Bowl for some reason. But I will say one thing. Let's keep an eye on those politicians in Latin America who shave or cut their hair. Let's see who we have to talk about next week.
Which high-profile guy got a haircut, yes.
Well, you know, as Alvarez Guedes used to say in his hilarious comedies, that what the CIA should have done is to shave Castro's beard off. Because he said that would have brought him down. To shave off his beard, he would have looked, he would have had a face of a come, you know what, that it would have just brought him down. Just the lack of the beard would have made him look so silly that they could have brought him down with that. He says they should have cut off his beard, shaved it off somehow. He said invent a little mosquito that goes into his beard or something and shaves it off or destroys it. And, you know, he would have been brought down that way.
He would have looked like Justin Trudeau.
He would have looked like Justin Trudeau. That's right. He would have said, I was going to say something about Justin Trudeau, but let's leave the poor guy alone. He just had a terrorist act in Quebec. I'm sure he's pretty busy up there. But Fausta, have a great week, and we'll talk to you the next time.
Thank you, Silvio. See you then.
Thank you very much. Fausta Rodriguez, words editor of Fausta's blog. We always had a lot of fun talking about Latin America and what's going on down there and a few other places as well, politics, everything up here. Thank you for listening to my friends over at Babaloo. Thank you for listening as well. Bye-bye, everybody.